Welcome back to Loaded and Rolling. I'm your host, Thomas Wasson, Enterprise Trucking Carrier Expert here at FreightWaves. And the topic for today is infrastructure, more specifically, hydrogen infrastructure. If you haven't known, the Nikola Corporation is working on a hydrogen highway project. And so we're going to be interviewing Ole Hufelman, president of the Nikola Energy Division at Nikola, going to be talking about this hydrogen highway plan and what it means. You know, it's one thing to develop the technology, but you also need to refuel it. The infrastructure is just as important as the product. And so let's welcome on, without further ado, let's welcome on Ole. Ole, welcome, sir. A pleasure to have you on.
Thomas, nice to meet you. Thank you for having me on today.
Before we dive in, tell us a little bit about yourself, because looking at your experience and stuff, you have a long history in, you know, infrastructure, alternative energies and development. Tell us a little bit about that first.
Yeah, so I joined Nikola about 5 months ago, and I'm currently responsible for the Nikola Energy Group. And it's important to point out that behind me, you see the Hyla brand and also on my shirt. So what we're doing at Nikola is obviously building hydrogen infrastructure under the Hyla brand, which I think is an important aspect to point out. Before I joined Nikola, I worked for a couple of years at a company called Plug Power, developing the electrolyzer business. So spending a lot of time on developing green hydrogen projects, which in the end is really what the energy transition is all about. And before that, I spent 30 years at Air Liquide. And there, part of my responsibility with my team was to build out light-duty station infrastructure for hydrogen fuel cell vehicles. So these are the cars that you see on the road, like the Mirais, the Clarity, and the car from the Hyundai side of things. So I spent a lot of time on infrastructure itself. And as you said yourself, it's not just about the infrastructure and the stations, but in the end, it's also about the product supply.
I feel like that's one of the things people forget. Even in the early days of automobiles, we had battery electric vehicles, but the internal combustion engine and the fueling infrastructure really started taking off. And it's almost a battle as much as the infrastructure as it is the product. Looking at this highway plan, give us a quick overview of what the hydrogen highway plan is and how you all fit into it.
Yeah, I think what's important to point out that we want to start, you know, with small steps and kind of build a credible and efficient network for our customers today. Our focus is California and Canada, where we see a lot of movement in the acceptance of the new technology, which is the fuel cell truck. And as we do the work, and I'll stay on California, we work very closely with our customers to understand what network they're looking for that allows them to integrate the fuel cell technology into their day-to-day operations. So we spend a lot of conversations on the sales side and on the fleet side, understanding what network we need to build between Southern California and Northern California.
And that's a very big zone between NorCal and SoCal. It could be upwards of like 300-ish miles back when I ran trucking in those areas. And when we're looking at developing that infrastructure, and especially with the state and their incentives, you know, how do you kind of approach this area? Is this something where you have to get in with the cities? Is the state, like when you're trying to find the first block of this building block to develop this plan, you know, what were some of those early steps to try and find out the best path forward?
The early step was actually looking for early adopters of our truck technology, Thomas. And as we were working with them, particularly, Biagi Brothers is a very good example. It was understanding where they run their operations, where they'd want to integrate our fuel cell truck, and then understanding what the most convenient fueling location would be for them. So that's how we originally chose our Ontario location, which we had the grand opening of just a couple of weeks ago. We continue to then build that out, right? Working with other fleet customers and understanding, again, what their operational needs are on fueling.
And that's a really cool spot in Ontario. I know that, especially that base in the Inner Empire, it's a very, it's hard to find good real estate. So when we're looking at customers wanting to adopt it, I'm assuming, are they looking at installing it at their own locations, or is this something where, you know, municipalities and cities are willing to set aside some land and have this kind of station and build it all together and deal with the zoning and everything?
Yeah, Thomas, maybe I'll describe a little bit the process that we go through so you kind of get a feel for things. once we've understood from the customer the best location to have a station, we go ahead and look for land, as you were describing. And once we have the land secured and have an understanding with the landlord, we start working with the AHJ, the authorization having jurisdiction, that helps us through the permitting process. When we talk about the permitting process, we do a lot of work with the building department, with the fire department, ensuring that what we're setting up is safe, is reliable, and also has the proper access for our customers. As we kind of go through that process, you can imagine we have a lot of discussions with the local authorities. We have a lot of discussions with stakeholders, mayors, fire marshals, building departments, individuals in the end that have to be comfortable with the fueling solution that we're putting in place. I think the other thing that is important to point out is that we have a strategy of modular stations and permanent stations. As I mentioned earlier, I spent a little bit of time trying to develop refueling infrastructure for light-duty vehicles in California. In around 2013, 14, 15, the objective was to have 45,000 cars in the market by 2023. Today, we have 15,000 cars. And the discussion, Thomas, always was, well, when are the cars coming and when are the stations coming? What we've decided to do at Nikola through Hyla is to take that conversation of when is the permanent station coming off the table. We are taking a modular station approach. This allows us to go into a jurisdiction, find a location, and then quickly set up a fueling experience for our customer. The process takes anywhere from 4 to 6 months versus a permanent station that would take up to 2 to 3 years. The technology that we're using, Thomas, is exactly the same. So the customer experience is what the driver would see when he goes to a permanent station.
I think that's really fascinating. I remember the battery electric Nikola I saw one at Covenant, and they had a modular charging station set up. Yep. And so that approach is the same way. You're almost easing them into it while you're waiting for all the regulatory and, you know, the additional years. So it's a long-term play by setting up the modular first compared to the permanent ones. If we're looking at the permanent solution, yeah. I've spoke with, I think you all earlier and a few other people. When you think of diesel fuel stations, you dig in, you have a bladder, you're digging into the ground, you're doing a lot of work. For hydrogen, is that going to be something when we're installing a hydrogen station, is it going to look very similar, or is this something where it's easier to install?
Yeah, good question. So the dispensing experience and the connection in the end for the driver to the truck itself is very similar to what the diesel experience is today. When you talk about the permanent station, there's a lot of work being done with the various laboratories, the DOE, et cetera, on ultimately having hydrogen storage below ground. However, the solutions that are being implemented today that are pretty rapid are above ground storage. So when you go to a permanent station, and I think you know we have a partnership with First Element Fuels in Oakland, when you visit that permanent station, you will actually see the hydrogen tank above ground. When it comes again to the driver's experience, the driver pulls in just like at a regular diesel truck stop, goes to the dispenser, connects, and then starts the fueling process. The one thing that I wanted to point out also, Thomas, is the reason why we do the modular approach is because we want to build density in the market that'll help people justify building permanent stations, right? It's what I mentioned earlier, right? The discussion on the light duty, well, when are the cars coming? Where do I put the station? What we're doing as we're talking to our customers is understanding where the volume will be. We then talk to partners or decide ourselves to build a permanent station. Knowing that that station will take 2 to 3 years, we built modular sites around it, usually three, to in the end be able to service 150 to 200 trucks. And once that permanent station is up and running, we will be able to move those customers over to the permanent station, remove the modular sites, and go redeploy those and build networks somewhere else.
Looking at the modular versus permanent, I'm assuming that so you start off with three, you can get 150 to 200. Is there an even bigger scale once the permanent one is in? Can I fuel in like a significant amount, or is it about the same, I guess, capacity and capability going from modular to permanent?
Yeah, there's really no technology that limits you as to scaling up more on the permanent station. The way we're designing them today is two lanes that can fill 200 trucks a day. If we have enough demand in a market, we'll add another, two lanes, four lanes. The design is very modular, Thomas, so we can expand you know, further as we need to.
And as you're working to sell, one thing I noticed in trucking, it's almost like people are waiting to see if somebody else does it. I had that at one of the startups I came from. We had no attention with this AI routing tech until another startup had talked about it, and then they talked to someone else. When you're looking at selling that to fleets and getting those early adopters, is that one of the things where, how are we seeing on movement? Is it where, oh, I spoke to one of your customers, I definitely want to try it out? Is it word of mouth, or are we looking at traditional, like I got to throw up some billboards or something to try to spread awareness and get that from early adopter to early users, you know?
Yeah, I think you have different kinds of customers. So there is a word of mouth aspect to it. There's also customers that through various legislations are somewhat forced into, right, looking at ZEV technology, and they see that the hydrogen solution, so the fuel cell solution, kind of fits their operating profile better. I think the other thing that you also see, as we build credibility, right, as we bring trucks to the market like we did at the end of 2023, like we did here first quarter, and as we built the fueling solutions, we built that and create that excitement in the market. We then have other customers coming to us and prospects in the end, asking us for additional truck orders in the end and growing our fueling infrastructure.
Well, I think the growing aspect's really interesting because especially if you're looking at fertile soil to grow a zero emission infrastructure, California, there's CARB rulings. EPA released their phase three final ruling. And it does look like, especially in that shorter haul segment, there's going to be a big push to have this zero emission. So it's almost a race to get yourself in position before the mandates kick in.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And really, the race, as you can imagine from my role, is building the infrastructure. Without us having the infrastructure and get it into the market quickly, you know, the large-scale adoption on the fuel cell technology is just not going to happen. The other thing that I want to stress is what we're building an infrastructure not for just Nikola. We're building it for anybody that has fuel cell technology and wants to bring it to market. So we do have an open station. Also, we're not looking to build the infrastructure all ourselves, Thomas. We know this is a heavy lift. We think we can be the leader. We are the subject matter experts today when it comes to heavy-duty fueling because we already do it at our Coolidge site. We do it in Ontario. And in the end, again, what we're trying to do is build this collective, this ecosystem that builds that hydrogen infrastructure, not just for the Nikola trucks, but also for any other future trucks that will be coming to market.
I like the infrastructure, the agnostic approach in terms of anyone can come to these locations. It's a very smart strategy. And I was curious as to, is there a unified way when you're plugging in and charging? You know, you have like special nozzles or chargers. There's a standardized fuel pump at a fueling station. In the hydrogen world, is that something where all of the folks are using the same way? So you have that ability, or is there still a few challenges where you've got a few specific makers that have their own unique special way of fueling it in, and they're trying to use that as an advantage compared to like a unified approach?
Yeah, what you find in the hydrogen world is because people started working on this early on and did look toward the electric side to make sure that there were good learnings. The actual connection between the dispenser and the receptacle is exactly the same. There is no difference. What you do find today is that you have some OEMs or some technologies that take less volume on the truck by having a lower pressure requirement. So, for example, you hear a lot about 350 bar versus 700 bar. So the one difference that you may run into, Thomas, is around the pressure that is required to fuel the truck. But the actual connection itself, and in the end, the industry does a really nice job standardizing on the solution so we don't end up with some of the challenges that we had on the electric side.
Do you think eventually, how you can go to a fuel station, there's the octane levels, 85, 93. Does that mean if I go to fuel up my hydrogen, I push the button for 350 or I push the button for 700? Or does the technology, is it naturally able to just fill it up at a faster or slower rate?
Yeah, no, so today, actually, you have two different buttons that you would be pushing and two different nozzles that you'd be connecting with, one on the 350 and the other one on the 700. You know, I think some of the questions that we're still all kind of grappling with is, you know, to your octane point, you know, will you at some point have a dispenser that says, listen, here is green hydrogen, here is, you know, blue hydrogen, and am I willing as a consumer to pay a different price, just like you do for the octane? in the end, with regard to the dispensing technology itself, it's going to be one standard solution for everybody. And again, I think the industry has done a nice job, particularly with SAE, to work together on ensuring you have the proper fueling protocol and you don't get into a situation where somebody is doing a fueling event that would, in the end, negate any warranty that you could have on the truck. So the connection between the truck and the dispenser are very important. They communicate with each other to ensure that the dispensing technology has the proper fueling protocol for the truck.
I think that's a smart play. I've seen, from my trucking experiences, the DEF, which is the urea-based thing to clean out their filtration units, they'll put that in the fuel tank, and they'll get the DEF one mixed with the fuel, and then they'll crash the entire engine. There's currently not a system to prevent that, but I've seen it happen. So that's really cool, because safety and redundancy built into the system. For green and blue hydrogen, is that it just came from a green source, or is that a specific makeup or combination?
Yeah, no, I mean, the molecule itself, Thomas, in the end is exactly the same, right? It's really the source that it comes from. So, green hydrogen is expected to come from, renewable energy, electrolytical conversion. So in the end, you use water, energy, and you end up with hydrogen and oxygen. So that is considered green. When you use, for example, nuclear power for electricity and then make that hydrogen again through an electrolyzer, the color now changes to pink. When you start looking at blue hydrogen there, your feed is natural gas. You crack it, you capture the CO2, and now you have blue hydrogen. The molecule itself, obviously, is exactly the same. It's really where the energy comes from or the feedstock to produce the hydrogen.
That's really fascinating. I'm waiting to see eventually the hydrogen farms, those little Gen 4 reactors that are real small and modular, make my hydrogen, send it out one of these days. But let's dive into the partnerships and collaborations, because that's going to be one of the big, that's one of the recurring things I hear, not only from hydrogen infrastructure, but from electric charging infrastructure. It does feel like people I've spoken to said that you really have to raise awareness and get that buy-in, because a lot of this infrastructure has to come from municipalities, states, and governments. Let's talk a little bit about that. How has it been, given your experiences before Hylia as well as currently, has it gotten easier for these governments and partnerships, or is it a situation where, there's still specific challenges? Have you seen any trends in terms of getting this adoption?
Yeah, good question. I think there has been a lot of movement, right, and a lot of visibility, particularly the last 2-3 years with the IRA, the PTC, the production tax credit, and then also the effort around the hubs, right? So I think there generally has been a recognition by government that there needs to be a cohesive and an overall coordinated approach. And I think there's been some good movement on that. So again, imagine, instead of one state or even one municipality deciding they're all in on hydrogen, you now have this overlay at the federal level that says we recognize that we need to have hydrogen at scale, particularly we need to produce hydrogen at scale. And that is really what the hubs have driven. So, Thomas, I think there's been a lot of really good movement over the last 3 years. Yeah, I think when you talk to speed, we rely on our partners and particularly industry to kind of do the acceleration and kind of help drive the speed. And we do a lot of work, obviously, within the local stakeholders to ensuring that they see the speed at which we're trying to go in the end to meet our customer needs. But overall, really, the last 2-3 years, there's been a lot of good movement, particularly with the hubs and, most recently, the EAP, the EPA with the Clean Ports Program. So there are a lot of initiatives there at the federal or national level that are really helping us drive local deliveries and help us build that infrastructure.
And I had a question, working on North America, specifically California, as well as Canada, are there any specific challenges coming from the American market and then the European one, which, as I've always understood it, the Europeans are typically further ahead in terms of green energy initiatives and trying to get ahead of it. Is this something where you can approach them the same way, or is there like lessons from experiences in Europe and Germany that we can pass on to the U.S., or is it kind of like a California where Europe leads the U.S. and eventually the U.S. kind of follows along?
Yeah, I think what we see today is really we're leading the way with Nikola Haila. There are a lot of other OEMs that are talking a lot about bringing trucks to the market, and we're today the first with the fuel cell truck that we have and really building it at scale. When you talk about infrastructure, then, you know, again, I do believe that there are some states that have taken a leadership position, and certainly California, with their commitment to clean air, has done a really nice job there. When you look at what's going on in Europe, you know, obviously Europe has a big commitment around renewables or renewable energy. I do see not as quick of a deliverable on the trucking side as we have here in the U.S. Our focus, again, is California, it is Canada, and that's where you see really most of the movement coming from today. I'm not going to say that that Europe is lacking, but today I would say the focus and really the world is going to be looking toward what we're doing in California and Canada.
You got to follow the energy. That's where the energy and the incentives are in California right now, is definitely leading the way. Looking ahead, federal grants as well. This is something where we've seen the current administrations put a lot of effort and focus as we're moving forward in the coming years. Is there anything on the radar that maybe upcoming grants or maybe potential what are some things you're looking into, at least from incentive sides at the state and federal level, that may be helping spur this tech?
Yeah, so I actually think there are a lot of good programs out there. You know, for us particularly, it's understanding how to use those programs, how to leverage that funding for the build-out that we're doing, and also see if that funding is directing us into certain markets. As you already mentioned several times, right, there's a lot of good incentives also on the truck side for our customers in California. Canada has a similar structure. So we're looking at what other geographies in the U.S. Have that. We are always starting with where can the truck go, right? Where are the customers that are interested in our solution? And so there it's understanding what kind of incentives or grant monies are available for that. Again, the Clean Ports Program is a good, you know, structure there, where as a company, we're able to partner with a customer and also with the port authority on, hey, we'd like to bring a clean solution to a port. And there's certain monies that are available for, again, the truck itself and then the infrastructure. But I want to make sure, Thomas, right, the really what's driving us today is where can the truck go to meet our customers' needs and in the end have a reasonable cost structure for our customers.
Definitely. And as we're wrapping this up, I've got about 2 minutes left, trying to put it all together, especially as we're moving forward. Do you expect, especially given... I guess the biggest thing is, are we going to see more infrastructure development, or are we going to expect more development within the actual hydrogen trucks? Is it a neck and neck race right now? Or if I'm looking ahead 3 to 5 years, what do you think is going to get built out more? Are we going to see a huge amount of trucks, or are we going to see finally getting the infrastructure, or is it got to be like at an even level, even keel?
Yeah, good question, Thomas. So what we're trying to do is get the infrastructure to be ahead of when the truck is available. Today, you know, even within Haila and Nikola, we're pretty much threading the needle. And what we're trying to do is on our infrastructure strategy is to be ahead. So I think what you'll see, at least from us over the next 6 to 12 months, is an acceleration of the build out of our modular stations. I do know that we're also doing a lot of work on the truck, right? So we have a certain cab design today. We're also looking at what the next, you know, model year should be looking like. And again, talking to our customers, understanding where they see the need on how we have to improve the truck itself, you know, be it the weight, be it the driving experience for the customer. So in the end, when the quickest visibility, I would say, Thomas, will be about infrastructure and accelerating that to make sure that we're ahead of the truck rollout. But innovation and development will occur at both on the infrastructure and on the truck side at the same time.
Gotta. If you build it, they will come and make a positive feedback loop. Ole, thank you so much for coming on the show. Folks want to learn more about, Nikola, Haila, and what y'all are working on. What's the best way to get in contact and learn more?
So I think the best place is obviously to look for us on our website. We do have a website both for Nikola and for Haila. I'm also out on LinkedIn. So if anybody wants to reach out to me directly, please connect with me there. And I'll be more than happy to answer any questions that are coming to me directly.
Well, looking forward to the development as well as that tech gets rolled out. Amazing stuff. Thanks again.
Thanks a lot, Thomas. Have a good day.
That's going to be a wrap for this show. But if you're just joining us, you can catch us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you may find your multimedia entertainment needs. We also have the newsletter loaded and rolling every Tuesday. Thursdays at 2. You actually can catch this on demand on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Check it out. Freightwaves.com loaded and rolling. Also, check out the folks at Nicola and Hyla. Great stuff going on there as well. Join us next week. We'll do it live.